माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवार धारी यशोदनंदन भज जनरंजन चीरावन चारियमुन जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
राजकचार्य अष्टोदर्श श्री श्रीमाराधाय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत गोस्वामी अनंत कोटि वैष्णवृंद की जय श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द सम ऑफ द डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we're reading from Canto 2, Chapter 6, Purusha Shukta Confirmed, text number 36. And I'm going to keep Karnapur busy going back and forth. There's so much in this verse. I was thinking how last time I was in Vrindavan, somebody was giving the talk. I don't know who it was, somebody from Europe, somebody that I don't know. He made an interesting point. He said, anytime you begin something, it's easy. When you first start chanting Hare Krishna, it's like, yeah, just chant, and it's so easy, and I'm getting something from it. And then you stay on it for a while, it gets harder and harder. But then if you stay with it, then you start getting the benefits. He also said, like, if you're learning a musical instrument, and I've taught a lot of kids, you show them a couple of real easy chords, and they think, wow, now I got it, now I can play, it's real easy. But then they got to do the hard work. And it takes a while before you actually get somewhere with it, and then you can have fun playing the instrument. For sometimes, oh, look at him go, going after Prabhupada's feet. This chapter, yeah, we're getting toward the end of it, and the chapter is, it started off this whole section with an interesting question, and so it's easy to, you know, hold your interest, but then it started getting really dense and deep and a lot of philosophy. Now we're coming to the end where it's like, okay, this is getting interesting here. Also, when we were teenagers, we used to take our bikes up Highway 9 and the Santa Cruz Mountains, and then ride down really fast, and that was really fun because it was up on a mountain. And sometimes we would just stay at the bottom and hitchhike, and somebody with a pickup truck would give us a ride up. We'd just put our bikes in the back of the pickup truck, we'd ride up to the top and ride down. We didn't have to do the hard work of pedaling up there. But when we did the hard work, it always seemed a lot better. The ride down seemed a lot more gratifying than when you just got the ride up here. So when you do the work and you go through the chapter and you study everything, this is like the payoff, these last few verses at the end, where Brahma makes some conclusions. And they're much more powerful. So similarly, I'm looking around, so many folks, we've all been on this path for 50 years. And when the kirtan was going on, I was looking around thinking, there's over 1,000 years of devotional experience in this room from all of the devotees. There's a lot. And so I hope y'all are reaping the fruits of all of the books you've distributed, all the pots you've washed, and all the sacrifices you've made. And so this is the culmination here, is to read the Srimad Bhagavatam together and appreciate it. And the more we do the service, the more we appreciate it. The more we do service, the more we appreciate chanting Krishna's names. They are symbiotic. We do service, we chant so that we can do service. We do service so that we can chant. We develop the proper attitude to chant and to hear. So, looking at this verse, there are some technical things, some Sanskrit that I want to point out. And as Prabhupada elaborates on them in the purport. So we'll get started. The first line. Nato smyaham tach charanam sami yusham. Nato smyaham tach charanam sami yusham. Okay, what words do you recognize here? All these pundits and charanam. Okay. What does charanam mean?
Feet.
Feet, okay. And somebody said aham. And what does that mean? I am. Let's see, how's it translated here? I. It's Brahma speaking. Anything else?
Nato.
Nato, here it's nata, let me offer my obeisances. And that's an important word in this line. So let me, okay, now scroll down to the word for word translation. Nata, let me offer my obeisances, asmi, am, aham, I, tat, the Lord's, charanam, feet. Samiyusham, of the surrendered soul. And so that Samiyusham kind of ties into the next line, I believe, from the translation. The translation, we'll touch on the translation, and then you scroll down to the translation. Therefore, it is best for me to surrender unto his feet, which alone can deliver one from the miseries of repeated birth and death. Such surrender is all auspicious and allows one to perceive all happiness. Even the sky cannot estimate the limits of its own expansion. So what can others do when the Lord himself is unable to estimate his own limits? So we're going to go through the verse a few more times. See how many points you can get from the verse. Count them on your fingers and then... You read it yesterday. Well, we're going to squeeze some more out of it. There's just so much in here. Yep. Yeah, there's a lot in here. This is a big sponge. You can keep squeezing more out of it. It's unlimited sponge. And that's kind of what Prabhupada elaborates on in the purport, how this is unlimited. And even Krishna has, this is the purport with that real interesting phrase of there's a competition between increment and measurement. He's trying to measure how unlimited he is, and then he does it, and then he gets more unlimited. So we're going to squeeze some more out of this verse. So, natosmyaham tach charanam samiyusham. So back to the word-for-word translation. Nata, let me offer my obeisances. Asmi, am, aham, I, tat, the Lord's charanam, feet, samiyusham. So now going back to the line of the Sanskrit. Natosmyaham tach charanam samiyusham. Nato smyaham tach charanam sami yusham. And the next line, bhavich chidam swastyayanam sumangalam. Bhavich chidam swastyayanam sumangalam. Can you recognize any words in this one?
Mangalam.
Mangalam, yes. Very auspicious. Su Mangalam, yes. Anything else?
Atma.
Ravachidam swastyat ayanam su mangalam. I don't see that in there. In the second line. No. It's in the next line. Bhavachchidam swastyayanam sumangalam. So, bhavachchidam, that which stops repetition of birth and death. So I'm offering obeisances to the feet of the Lord, and by doing that, samiyusham means of the surrendered soul, then these are the three things that you get, and Prabhupada talks about this in the purport. And then he says, these three things are unlimited. There's no limit to how much bhavachchidam, that which stops repetition of birth and death. Swastyayanam, perception of all happiness. Sumangalam, all auspicious. So the swastyayanam, that's what he focuses on. He says the happiness of Krishna and the relationship with Krishna is unlimited. And no one can measure it. And it just keeps growing and growing. And it's been going on for eternity. So, bhavachchidam swastyayanam sumangalam. Then the next line. Yo hyatmamaya vibhavam smapariyadad. Yo hyatmamaya vibhavam smapariyadad. And this one's going to be a little tough to unpack, but this is that comparison. Even the sky cannot estimate the limits of its own expansion. So what can others do when the Lord himself is unable to estimate his own limits? So, he, atmamaya, personal energies, vibhavam, potency, sma, certainly, pariyagat, cannot estimate. And then the next line. Yatha nabha svantam atha pare kuta.
Yatha nabha svantam atha pare kuta.
Recognize the word in there? Nabha, yes. And what does that mean? Sky, yes. Sky, space. So yatha, just as much as, nabha, the sky, swantam, its own limit, atha, therefore, apare, others, kuta, how. So the sky doesn't even know how far it can go. So how can we measure our own good fortune? How can the Lord measure his own expansion? So reading those two lines again. Yo hyatmamaya vibhavam smapariyagad.
Yo hyatmamaya vibhavam smapariyagad.
Yatha nabha svantam atha pare kuta.
Yatha nabha svantam atha pare kuta.
Natosmyaham tach charanam samiyusham. Bhavachidam Swastyayanam Sumangalam. Yo hyatma maya vibhavam sma paryagad. Yatha nabha svantam atha parekuta. Translation again. Therefore, it is best for me to surrender unto his feet, which alone can deliver one from the miseries of repeated birth and death. Such surrender is all auspicious and allows one to perceive all happiness. Even the sky cannot estimate the limits of its own expansion. So what can others do when the Lord himself is unable to estimate his own limits? Is it the same translation? Okay, because this is an older book. Purport. Lord, well, okay, who counted how many points there are in the verse? Did anybody do that? Should we try? How many points are there? Just throw out a few points. There's so much going on in there. Anybody?
I need to surrender.
I need to surrender. Okay.
Surrender brings all happiness.
Surrender brings happiness, all happiness. Okay.
It brings all auspiciousness.
Brings all auspiciousness.
Stops repeated birth and death.
Stops repeated birth and death. Okay, you're up to like 7 points. Okay, good. Yeah, there's a lot in there. Anything else? Anybody else see anything in there?
What to speak of others.
What to speak of others. Yeah. Okay. So 8 points. Let's see which ones. What do you think Prabhupada's going to speak on first? Oh, you got to scroll down or scroll up so you can't see. What do you think he's going to talk about in this purport? He's going to talk about Lord Brahma. What's he going to say about Lord Brahma? Yeah, of course. He's the best one. He can't reach the end of understanding. So, atha pare kuta, what to speak of others? What to speak of us? Who do we think we are if we can think we can understand? I haven't heard this in a long time, but it used to be whenever you'd see people from India and we'd try to show them a Bhagavad Gita, and they would almost always say, "Yes, I am knowing." And you know, as if I know everything. And Prabhupada talks about that in the purport too. They think they know everything, but nobody can know everything about Krishna. All right, so let's jump into the purport. Lord Brahma, the greatest of all learned living beings, the greatest sacrificer, the greatest observer of the austere life, and the greatest self-realized mystic, advises us, as the supreme spiritual master of all living beings, that one should simply surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord in order to achieve all success, even up to the limit of being liberated from the miseries of material life and being endowed with all auspicious spiritual existence. So that was all one sentence. He introduces Lord Brahma as the greatest sacrificer, the greatest observer of the austere life, and the greatest self-realized mystic. Why is he saying all of that? Has anybody been...
Lord Brahma's there for some of that too.
Yes.
He establishes him as an authority, a very high authority.
Yes, and there's another reason for it. Is anybody... Yeah, it's hard to get like when you're reading just one verse a day. But it was... Did somebody get it?
He's the original personality of Godhead, so he knows everything. I mean, he knows more than... Not everything. He knows as much as anybody could know.
He's the original personality. Brahma. Uh-huh. Yes, all of that's true. But the reason he's saying that is, if you just look at the previous verse, Brahma says all of that. Although I am known as the great Brahma, perfect in the disciplic succession of Vedic wisdom, and although I have undergone all austerities and am an expert in mystic powers and self-realization, and although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of the living entities who offer me respectful obeisances. Still, I cannot understand him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. So he's saying, so Prabhupada's just echoing what was said in the previous verse. He's keeping the contiguity of the presentation going. I'll read this sentence again. We'll get through one sentence at least. Lord Brahma, the greatest of all learned living beings, the greatest sacrificer, the greatest observer of the austere life, and the greatest self-realized mystic, advises us as the supreme spiritual master of all living beings. So those are all the things that he said in the previous verse, that one should simply surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord in order to achieve all success, even up to the limit of being liberated from the miseries of material life and being endowed with all auspicious spiritual existence. So he's combining, this is what he said in the previous verse, now what he's saying in this verse. You should surrender, you get these things. He's establishing the authority of Brahma. He's the one everybody looks up to. Lord Brahma is known as the Pitamaha, or the father's father. A young man consults his experienced father about discharging his duties. So the father is naturally a good advisor. But Lord Brahma is the father of all fathers. He is the father of Manu, who is the father of mankind all over the universal planets. Therefore, the mankind of this insignificant planet should kindly accept the instruction of Brahmaji and would do well to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord rather than try to estimate the length and breadth of the Lord's potencies. His potencies are immeasurable, as confirmed in the Vedas. Parasya shaktir vividhayava shruyate swabhavaki jnana bala kriyacha. Anybody know that verse? Well, I know you know it. I know you know it. Anybody else besides Pushkar? We got to use the... Parasya Shakti. Natasya Karyam Karanam Chavidyate. Okay, anyway, everybody knows it. He has nothing to do. All of his shaktis are so powerful that everything looks as if it's going on automatically. Parasya Shakti Vividhayava Shruyate Swabhaviki Gyanabala Kriyacha. He is the greatest of all. Now he's paraphrasing that verse. What's the first line? Natasya Karyam Karanam Chavidyate. Yes. Natat samas cha yadikascha drishyate. Natat samas. Sama means equal. You don't see anyone equal to him. No one is greater than him. He is the greatest of all. And all others, even the greatest of all living beings, namely Brahmaji, admits that the best thing for us is to surrender unto him. Therefore, only those persons with a very poor fund of knowledge claim that they themselves are lords of all that they survey. And what can they survey? They cannot survey even the length and breadth of a small sky in one small universe. Okay, Prabhupada quotes this a lot. I'm the lord of all I survey. And for 25 extra bonus points, who knows where, what he's quoting from. And it won't be what you're thinking. I'm the lord of all I survey. Nope, it's not a Vedic reference. Okay. No, it's not a Sanskrit reference. It's not a Vedic reference. It is from a poem. The poet Cowper. And Prabhupada... The poet Cowper. And it's the poem about Defoe, the guy that became Robinson Crusoe. And it's a poem, and Prabhupada seems to have really, he quotes another part from it too. Society, friendship, and love divinely bestowed upon man. Who knows the rest of it? Had I the wings of a dove, I'd fly to them again. It's about this guy being on an island all by himself. And I guess that was something they studied, and Prabhupada just took that phrase, society, friendship, and love, divinely bestowed upon man. And he quotes it as if everybody knows it. And and then this one, I'm the Lord of all I survey. So he's walking down the sand, and he's looking around, and I'm the Lord of all I survey, but what good does it do me? There's nobody around. Society, friendship, and love, divinely bestowed upon man. Had I the wings of a dove, I'd go to them again. So he's taken this poem and using it in a different context. Therefore, only those persons with a very poor fund of knowledge claim that they themselves are lords of all that they survey. And what can they survey? They cannot survey even the length and breadth of a small sky in one small universe. Tiny little universe. The so-called material scientist says that he would need to live 40,000 years to reach the highest planet of the universe, being carried by a Sputnik. This is also utopian because no one can be expected to live 40,000 years. Besides, when the space pilot returns from his travel, none of his friends would be present to receive him back as the greatest astronaut, as has become fashionable for modern bewildered scientific men. One scientific man, who had no belief in God, was very much enthusiastic in making plans for his material existence, and therefore opened a hospital to save the living. But after opening the hospital, he himself died within 6 months. So one should not spoil his human life, which is obtained after many, many changes of bodies in 8,400,000 species of life, simply for the concocted material happiness of life, by increasing artificial needs in the name of advancement of economic development and scientific knowledge. But one should simply surrender unto the feet of the Lord to make a solution of all miseries of life. That is the instruction of Lord Krishna directly in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam by Brahmaji, the Supreme Father of all living beings. So this is a theme that we read in Prabhupada's books over and over again, and it seems at first glance like it's a pretty simplistic view, discounting all of the advancement in science. And, all right, so we can only see to the end of the sky. But, you know, that's pretty good. We got it pretty good here. And Prabhupada, what's he doing there? What, anyone have any insights? What's he trying to accomplish by this? He's just tearing down the whole, everything that we're working so hard for. And he's saying, look at this guy. He was a scientific man. And he was trying to build a hospital to save the living, but he himself died within 6 months. So what can you do? We're powerless here. It's hopeless, meaningless. Who's the philosopher that gave the philosophy of meaninglessness? Absurdism, it's a branch of philosophy. Sartre? I'm probably... Camus. Yeah. Camus, Sartre, all of these guys, they... it's interesting, and I talked with a student once who was really excited about that absurdism. And he said, by studying this and seeing how absurd it is, it gives you a certain level of freedom. Like nothing matters. I'm free. I can just go about it. And so, talking with him, I said, you know, actually, that's in the Bhagavad Gita. Briefly. Krishna in the second chapter, when he's speaking to Arjuna about the soul and the Atma lives forever, and he says, but even if you don't believe in this, it comes into being for a moment and then it's gone forever. What's the big deal? Nobody laments. So briefly, he's touching on absurdism. You've just appeared out of nowhere, and then you're gone forever. What do you have to lament about? So either everything is absurd, there is no meaning, or each and everything is full of meaning. And so on both sides, and we're somewhere in the middle. If we fully believe in Krishna, then we're all the way on this side. We believe each and every molecule and second has purpose and meaning. Krishna is watching us, taking care of everything that goes on, every thought in our brain that comes to us. Everything's important, or nothing's important. So either way you look at it, there's nothing to worry about, nothing to lament about. But we're somewhere in the middle. We're like, maybe, I don't know, Krishna doesn't seem to be in control right now. I'm having a hard time. Or everything's absurd. Well, I don't know, maybe this is important. So we come into worrying about things. So Prabhupada's saying, everything is absurd and everything has meaning. Everything here is absurd. Just forget about it. And the only thing worth doing, according to Lord Brahma, he spends the first part of this, let's see, we're still in the first paragraph. Spends the first part establishing the authority of Brahma. This is the person everybody goes to, and this is what he says to do. This is what you should do. Besides, you're really small. You can't even build a hospital to keep yourself alive. You're going to die. You've got this great opportunity of the human form of life. Don't waste it by increasing the artificial needs in the name of advancement of economic development and scientific knowledge. You should simply surrender under the feet of the Lord to make a solution of all miseries of life. So it sounds really simplistic, but he's got the conviction to back it up, and he's written 60 volumes of books to prove it. And it's a irresistible force. Surely, or he is an irresistible force. Prabhupada's, I could say it, his conviction is so powerful. And he's moved so many people. That is the instruction of Lord Krishna directly in the Bhagavad Gita. So now he's quoted Brahma saying, do all of this. And then he says, that's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. And that is the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam by Brahmaji, the Supreme Father of all living beings. Okay. That's the theme of the first paragraph. Now we have two more paragraphs to go. After denying this surrendering process, as recommended both in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and for that matter, in all authorized scriptures, anyone will be forced to surrender unto the laws of material nature. Okay, so if we don't surrender to Krishna, we surrender to laws of material nature. That's a term Prabhupada throws around a lot. Laws of material nature. So those would be three modes of nature. Goodness, passion, ignorance. And then, what are some of the other laws? Birth, death, disease, and old age. Time factor, yes.
Karma.
Karma. Our own mind, intelligence, and false ego. Okay, so these are all under the category of laws of material nature. Yes, mind, ego, those are being pushed around by modes of nature, and karma is pushing us around, time factor. Anything else? Oh, I mentioned the four birth, death, disease, old age, and then... Yep, threefold miseries. Repeated birth and death. Okay.
Income tax.
Okay. Yes. That's the laws of material nature. Exactly.
Incredible wind,
Yeah, what's that shloka from?
You should know that.
The King Kulashekar, Kamadinam Katitam, something Durnadesha. Yeah, it's a good quote. Okay.
So,
right, controversy. All right, so I'll read that sentence again. Anyone denying this surrendering process, as recommended both in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and for that matter, in all authorized scriptures, will be forced to surrender unto the laws of material nature, which everything that we just discussed all falls under that category. We don't have to surrender to it. That's like, really? How? We've been trying to surrender to Krishna, but all these other things are still affecting us. We're trying to change our mentality. It takes a long time. We've been surrendered to this material nature for a long time. All right, so here we go. The living entity, by his constitutional position, is not independent. He must surrender either unto the Lord or unto material nature. Material nature is also not independent of the Lord, since the Lord himself has claimed material nature as mama maya, or my energy, Bhagavad Gita 7.14. And as me bina prakritir ashtada, we probably changed it around. No, they did it that way there. Bina me prakritir ashtada, or my separated energy in eight divisions. Bhagavad Gita 7.4. Therefore, material nature is also controlled by the Lord, as he has claimed in Bhagavad Gita, mayadyakshena prakriti suyate sa chara charam. Under my direction only, as material nature, is material nature working, and thus are all things moving. Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, text 10. And the living entities, being superior energy to matter, have choice and discrimination, either to surrender unto the Lord or to surrender unto material nature. Okay, so we're given choice and discrimination. By surrendering unto the Lord, one is happy and liberated. But by surrendering unto material nature, the living entity suffers. Okay, so that's been established, but why is it such a hard sell? So in the end, all suffering means... So the end of all suffering means surrendering unto the Lord, because the surrendering process itself is bhavachchidam, or liberation from all material miseries, swastyayanam, or perception of all happiness, and sumangalam, or the source of all auspicious, of everything auspicious. That's interesting. He says the surrendering process itself is those three things. What's he referring to? I bet you Pundarik knows what he's talking about here. Or, I'll read the sentence again. So the end of all suffering means surrendering unto the Lord, because the surrendering process itself is bhavachchidam, or liberation from all material miseries, swastyayanam, or perception of all happiness, and sumangalam, or the source of everything auspicious. Anyone know what he's referring to?
Yeah.
Yes. And as referred to in which book?
Nectar of Devotion
is what I was thinking of. Exactly. Yes, that one. Kleshagni. Kleshagni Su. Kleshagni Sulaba Moksha Laguta Krit. Yes, it makes. Yeah. Kleshagni. So all of your kleshas, all your problems are destroyed just by the surrendering process. And that's just the beginning. Okay. And in the commentary, Vishwanath, probably in other places too, it talks about those two leaves, the first two leaves of the Bhakti Creeper are Kleshagni and Sulabha. All good things come, all bad things go. Shubhada. Okay, thank you. Kleshagni, Shubhada, something, anyway. And Moksha Lagutakrit. Last time we were studying that, Lagutakrit, it makes moksha ludicrous. And we're looking at how Lagutakrit is so much like ludicrous. And so we're kind of joking with that. And, that's Lagutakrit. Yeah. Okay, Ganga Narayan quoted the entire translation of the first verse of the Gauravastakam. The spiritual master is receiving benediction from the ocean of mercy, and just as a cloud pours water on a forest fire to extinguish it, thus the spiritual master delivers. The spiritual master delivers the materially afflicted world by extinguishing the blazing fire of material existence. I offer my respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. Yeah, we used to recite the whole thing every morning. And so as soon as one accepts a spiritual master, then the blazing fire of material existence is extinguished. Thank you. Good reference. How are we doing for time? Okay, I think we can do this. We can get through this. We got to surrender. It's Bhavachchidam Swastyayanam Sumangalam. Moksha Lagutakrit. Ludicrous. Yeah, when we were studying that, we looked up the word ludicrous, and that was kind of fun too, because it said that it's something that's so ridiculous and so unachievable that it is humorous. It's like funny. It's just so impossible. So ludicrous and Lagutakrit, let's see, there's a rap singer, Ludicrous, and we were thinking like maybe a devotee rap singer could be Lagutakrit. Be a good stage name, Lagutakrit. Therefore. So we're just talking about the end of all suffering means surrendering unto the Lord, because the surrendering process itself is Bhavachchidam, or liberation from all material miseries, Swastyayanam, or perception of all happiness, and Sumangalam, or the source of everything auspicious. Therefore, liberty, happiness, and all good fortune can be attained only by surrendering unto the Lord, because He is full liberty, full happiness, and full auspiciousness. Okay, only. So that's why Prabhupada spent the previous paragraph saying, material life, you're getting nowhere. Even if you are the Lord of all you survey, how much can you survey? This is utopian. He said, even if you go to the farthest planet, it's 40,000 years traveling at the speed of light. We can't travel at the speed of light anyway. And even if you were to go 40,000 years, come back 40,000 years, no one can live that long. It's utopian. It's impossible. Ganga Narayan, still trying hard. Surrender, Ganga Narayan. Just give it up. Give it up. You're surrendering to material nature with cryogenics. Nope, it's a myth. He didn't do that. I looked it up. I know, it's just an old... It's okay, we're gonna finish this prayer part. We're getting to the really good part. We worked really hard. Now we're coming to the dessert here. Therefore, liberty, happiness, and all good fortune can be attained only by surrendering unto the Lord, because He is full liberty, full happiness, and full auspiciousness. Such liberation and happiness are also unlimited, and they have been compared to the sky, although such liberation and happiness are infinitely greater than the sky. In our present position, we can simply understand the magnitude of greatness when it is compared with the sky. We fail to make a measurement of the sky, but the happiness and liberty obtained in association with the Lord are far greater than the sky. That material happiness is so... That spiritual happiness is so great that it cannot be measured even by the Lord Himself, not to speak of others. It is said in the scriptures, Brahma Sokyam Hyanantam. I don't know if this is another reference from the... Yeah, but that one is a little different. Brahma Sokyam Twanantam. Oh, okay. Here in this book, it's a little different. The editors repaired it. Mine says, Brahma Sukham Hi Anantam. Spiritual happiness is unlimited. Here, it is said that even the Lord cannot measure such happiness. This does not mean that the Lord cannot measure it and is therefore imperfect in that sense. And this is where it gets real interesting. The actual position is that the Lord can measure it. But the happiness in the Lord is also identical with the Lord on account of absolute knowledge. So the happiness derived from the Lord may be measured by the Lord, but the happiness increases again, and the Lord measures it again. And then again, the happiness increases more and more, and the Lord measures it more and more. And as such, there is eternally a competition between increment and measurement. So much so that the competition is never stopped, but goes on unlimitedly, and how do we pronounce this? Ad infinitum? And ad infinitum? Thank you. Spiritual happiness is anandam buddhivardhanam, or the ocean of happiness which increases. The material ocean is stagnant, but the spiritual ocean is dynamic. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, fourth chapter, Adi Lila, Kaviraj Goswami has very nicely described this dynamic increment of the ocean of spiritual happiness in the transcendental person of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. All right, that final paragraph is, that's the payoff after studying the whole chapter. Yes?
Mm-hmm. It's so moving, so dynamic. So I wonder if someone has a dictionary to look up the word stagnant and see how Prabhupada knew the actual or is the to know that it's just that.
Yes. Well, the border of the ocean, it stays there. It doesn't move beyond it. He's walking on the beach on one of those morning walks in LA. He says, and he quotes Yachakshari Shasavita Sakala Grahanam Raja Samasta Suramurti Rishesha Tejas, that the sun, although it's so powerful, stays in its orbit because Krishna dictates this is where you go. And he said the ocean also stays right here. Although it's so powerful, it could easily come on up. And the ocean is given as an example in the Bhagavad Gita as
um
Yes, although many rivers are flowing into it, it stays where it is because it's so big. If a river is flowing into this little cup, it's going to overflow. But the ocean is so big that tons of rivers are flowing in there all the time, and the ocean is just, it can handle it. So in the same way, a grave person, so many desires come into them, and they're just like, because they're focused on the self, the Atma, which is so much bigger than the body, the mind, the ego, the intelligence. So when you're focused on the self, which is unlimited in some sense, then you can, what's the Sanskrit again? Apuryamanam. Achala pratishtam. So apuryamanam, it's constantly being filled, but achalam? Achalam pratishtam, yeah. It stays right there. So it's stagnant. And Lord Chaitanya also is, he's very deep and very grave. And all the other sannyasis around him who are older than him, he was just so staunch in his sannyas vows that it made them nervous. They were like, well, this guy's really heavy. He's really grave. But later on in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is not what he's referring to here. This is from the Adi Lila. But later on, it talks about him being very deep. But the ocean, although the ocean is very deep, and it's the example of stability, achala, pratishtam, unmoving, when the full moon comes and draws, the tide rises. And so when Lord Chaitanya is in his ecstasy, he's uncontrollable, just like the tide. You can't control the tide. You can't stop. That water's coming in. You can't hold it back. And so when he was in his ecstasy, he was unable to control that. And so that's what the Antyalila is about. And this part, the fourth chapter of the Adi Lila, I did a quick skim through it. And did you find the reference here? On this ocean business? Yeah, that's what we're about here in the fourth chapter of the Adi Lila. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has very nicely described this dynamic increment of the ocean of spiritual happiness in the transcendental person of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. I think you'd have to read the whole chapter to understand, but he's got something. What's your name again? Saranga Thakur, Hare Krishna. You want to hand him a microphone?
I think you already went in that direction about the ocean. I don't think Prabhupada's referring to specifically an ocean, but more figurative, the spiritual ocean, the ocean of happiness, the spiritual ocean, you know, comparing the material ocean to the material nature. So not necessarily the ocean.
Yes. Yes, well, he refers to Anandam Bhutivardhanam, and so, let's see, do we have time? Yeah, we could unpack the Shikshastakam. Cheto Darpanam Arjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. So Krishna's name, Anandam Bhutivardhanam, just Krishna's name alone expands the ocean, the limits of the ocean. But Ganga Narayan has something conclusive to say here.
The end of the purport was the payoff, as you said, which is the competition between Krishna, who is Vrajendra Kumar, the taster of all rasa, and Srimati Radharani, who is and there's a competition, and Krishna, Lord Chaitanya said, Krishna said that Srimati Radharani experiences 10 million times the pleasure that Krishna experiences. That's why Krishna wanted to find out, because he couldn't fully taste this. Where Srimati Radharani, she is the repository of all rasa. So ultimately, we have to serve Srimati Radharani. We have to become servants of Radharani in the ultimate sense, but that's an advanced stage. After we surrender to Krishna.
Yes, I believe that may be what he's getting at. But to study the fourth chapter, it's been a busy week. I opened it up, I was like, yeah, I'm going to find what he's talking about. I want to make sure I get it entirely clear, but that's probably what it is. Good job. Thank you, Ganga Narayan. Now we can relax. But Krishna never relaxes. He's just always expanding, and that measurement and increment, and that's been going on and on. And it's been going on for eternity. So how are we ever going to catch up if Krishna is running to catch up with himself? I was thinking about when, and there's always this interplay of Krishna being limited before his devotee, and then showing himself to be unlimited, like with the Damodar Leela. And then I was thinking about when Krishna is running from the battle and he comes into the cave, and Muchukunda gets kicked by Kaliyavana and burned up. Muchukunda is woken up and he's looking and he sees Krishna. And he asks, "Who are you?" And Krishna says, "That's a difficult question to answer. Anantashesh has been trying to answer that question from the beginning of time. And with his thousands of mouths, he's been talking on and on, and he still hasn't fully answered it. And then, so that's how Krishna answered Muchukunda's question. Who are you? Yes, Gadigraj has... What was before the beginning? Okay, really? Really, you're going to go, what was before the beginning of time? Ganga Narayan knows. it was Mahavishnu exhaling. Isn't that? He exhales, and then, let's see, somewhere in one of the, in several of these creation explanations, the time element enters. He just woke up too. So sleeping on a hard cave floor. So what happens before the beginning of time? Yeah, that's like, you know, going, like we're talking about measuring the sky. You go up in the sky and you just keep going up and say, where's the end? It's another few feet, and you just keep going. And where do you stop? You know, the measuring the sky, there's no end to it. And the beginning of time, all right, you get in your time machine and you just keep going back into the past, and you just keep going. And, well, where does this begin? It doesn't. Anadi. Anadi, Adi, Govinda. Anadi. There's no beginning. He is the beginning. Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam. But what's the Adi Karana? What is the Adi Karta? What is the original action that started everything? And if you were to go to that, there'd be one before it. Like, what? So, it's beyond our understanding, and the happiness, let's see, Such liberation and happiness are infinitely greater than the sky. So the happiness and liberation and all of the things from bhakti are unlimited. And we can't contain them in a material body or material consciousness. So we have to clear all this stuff away to make room for this swastyayanam bhavachchidam. What was the... bhavachchidam swastyayanam sumangalam. So we got to clear out all of the other stuff to make room for these three things. So congratulations, we've made it through the purport. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hari Bol. Thank you for the water.